And good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show here at KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. This is Julie Calamine, one of your usual morning hosts. I will be your only morning host this morning because Phil Huff, my co-host, is away this week. We've got a great topic this week. We're going to be talking with Fish and Game Officer Matt Haig. He's with Idaho Fish and Game Fall Update. It'll be a fall Fish and Game Update. I'll be introducing him in a moment. But first, some weather. Well, the weather's been interesting lately. Today, it looks like we're going to be having a high of 59 degrees and sunny tonight, clear, and then patchy frost with a low of 30. Wednesday, we're looking at patchy frost, then mostly sunny with a high of 65, beautiful fall weather. And Wednesday night will be partly cloudy with a low of 34. Going on that way throughout the week, looking for, let's just make sure, more of the same the rest of the week, mostly clear, highs in the 50s and low 60s, lows in the middle upper 30s. So beautiful fall weather, and it's beautiful, beautiful fall weather for hunting and fishing. And luckily, we've got a topic that is in line with this kind of weather. I'd like to go ahead and introduce our morning show guest this morning, who is Matt Haig. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Julie.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
I suppose you've been out in this cool, frosty weather quite a bit.
I have. It's been nice. It's been a good break from the summer.
A nice change from heat and smoke.
Yes.
Yeah, it really has. Well, this morning we're going to be talking about fall update, hunting seasons, hunting safety, and you are really the person to do that for us. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to be working with Fish and Game.
I went to University of Montana and got a wildlife biology degree. I was really set on working for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. My girlfriend at the time, which is my wife now, started working for Idaho Fish and Game and said, hey, you should come over and check them out. And so I did in 1998, I believe it was, and just started from there. Worked as a wildlife technician, had some really great jobs, trapping grizzly bears, looking for wolverine, harlequin duck surveys, and I thought, you know, I really want to stay in the field, and I really enjoy conservation enforcement, so I went into law enforcement, wildlife law enforcement.
I see. Well, it's nearly 20 years. You don't look like you could have been doing this for 20 years.
Has it been 20 years?
Almost. Yeah. It was 98.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, maybe all the hiking and getting outdoors is keeping you young.
I hope so.
That's right. Well, what is your title? What kind of work do you do?
My title is Senior Conservation Officer. Most states, it's called Game Warden. Over the last few years, they've been changing names to Wildlife Police, Wildlife Enforcement, all different names. But it's all rooted in the historic Game Warden position.
Okay. Yeah. So Game Warden, Fish and Game Warden,
yes.
Officer. Okay. Yeah. Well, what then does that translate into in terms of the work that you do? What are you doing these days?
Well, it's multifaceted. So throughout the year, we about 60% of the time, some officers are a little bit different with the percentage, but about 60% of the time we're enforcing the law or educating about the law. And we also get into public education, doing presentations, youth waterfowl hunts, hunter education. And then we also assist our wildlife biologists in collecting data and creating the next regulations for the following years.
Yeah. So as I walked up, I saw that your truck was parked outside, and it's pretty obvious because it's covered with public information decals, isn't it?
It is.
Turn in poachers, bear aware, et cetera, that sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good calling card for a Fish and Game.
It is. We like to call it flying the flag. So we get the information out there, and that's a big component of, we want to educate people on the forefront, not have them make a mistake on the back end. So
better to be aware and not make a mistake.
Absolutely.
Very much so. I agree. Well, what are the department's priorities in the fall? As we've begun some hunting seasons, but there are many more still to come.
The fall, really, everybody changes gears. All our habitat management and enforcement, we're all in the field collecting data about the hunting season, enforcing rules, making sure everyone's following the rules, making it fair for everyone that's paying for the resource. And that's what happens in the fall. In the spring and the winter, things change a lot. We're doing different things, but
sure.
The fall.
And by collecting data, is that collecting it from hunters, or are you out doing scientific projects?
Most of the projects cease in the fall. So we're collecting data from the hunters, whether that's talking with them in the field, or collecting hard data such as our check stations where we have people drive through a mandatory stop. It's a state law. You have to stop at our check stations. And we collect data on how long they've hunted, what kind of animals they've seen, what did they harvest, if anything.
Is that typical for most of the western states, or is Idaho like everybody else, or are we unique?
No, I think that's pretty typical of the 11 western states that they're collecting data through check stations and information from the hunters themselves.
Sure. Do you feel like you have adequate, I suppose Fish and Game never feels like they have adequate staff, but you've got enough guys out there to get good data?
We do, especially on our wildlife end and our fisheries and our habitat. I think we lack a little bit in the enforcement end. We have 85 field officers covering, and just to go back, we've had 85 officers since the late 50s. When the population was 400,000, now we're pushing, 1.4 million? And so those officers are covering that many more people, not so much more space, but that servicing more people. So we're a little bit inadequate in that sense, but a lot of that's budget-wise, and we're an expensive position because we're in the field all the time. We have lots of equipment. We have lots of needs, lots of training. So it's an expensive proposition to expand.
Mm-hmm, but an important one.
It is, yeah. I'm kind of biased, though.
I suppose. Well, let's move on and talk a little bit about this year's hunting season. I'm interested in knowing what the outlook is like, how the various seasons might be different from other years, and why that would be. So how is 2017 shaping up?
It's going to be a different season. So we've started a new cycle of regulations, especially geared toward relieving landowners of depredating elk and deer. We've got a larger population in the valleys, and we're trying to address that through some controlled hunts, some more liberal hunts on cows and does in the valley, especially north of Pondere Lake. It's going to be interesting to see what happens.
And that means for both deer and elk, there are for the elk cow season and deer additional, doe tags, something like that.
Yeah, and we have an extra doe tag and then a controlled hunt. And most of the panhandle, except for, there's even a portion of Unit 4, but most of the panhandle has additional cow hunting opportunities, even on a general over-the-counter tag.
That's unusual, so, yes?
It is. It's been 8 years since we've been able to, for the general, someone to pick up a tag at the counter to be able to have a cow opportunity. And most of that, or all of it actually, is centered around agriculture or private land. Because our herds have really been growing because we have not harvested any cows.
For 8 years. Wow. Yeah. But that's a good sign for elk, I would think.
It is, especially down in the valley where they're really thriving. They have the food source they need. There's not predators that are after them like they are in the hills. So we're really addressing that lower level population.
Mm-hmm. And when is the cow season happening? Is it soon? Is it for the entire elk season?
Well, there's multiple seasons. So there's the controlled hunt started August 1st and continues through December 31st. So if you're a holder of that tag, you have that much time to shoot a cow. Not a lot of people got out in August just because of the heat, and they didn't want meat to spoil. On the general hunt, the over-the-counter hunt, there was 3 days. Maybe it was 3 days in archery season. And then the rifle, the B tag, will be October 15th through the 17th, where they can harvest a cow within 1 mile of private property.
Okay. And that is that the, will that be the area for all of the cow hunts within 1 mile of private agricultural property?
The controlled hunts are on private, 1 mile from cultivated.
Oh, I see.
So you have to be within 1 mile of a cultivated field.
And on private property.
Got it. So we're really addressing those cows that are eating hay and eating crops. And we're also kind of addressing it with the general hunt, being within a mile of private land. So it's added another buffer to that.
Yeah, that aspect of the hunt.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, that is very interesting about the elk season. You've mentioned that there will be additional doe tags for deer season, and just living in the area and driving on 95, I can understand why that might be happening.
Yeah, it's better to harvest them and put them in people's freezers than it is to cause catastrophic damage to vehicle collisions. Just overpopulation is not a good thing.
No. So that's interesting. And then obviously we're not having any problems with our deer, and seemingly not with our elk populations. Let's talk about the moose population. How is that doing?
You have to look at it localized in certain areas and drainages. The moose population is not doing so well as it is across most of North America. Well, the United States, really. I mean, you look at Maine, Minnesota, Michigan, and Idaho and Montana. It's multifaceted. There's a parasite load from warmer winters that we haven't seen before. I've never seen parasite load like it's been in the last 3 or 4 years. And then in the wintertime, our wolves really tend to focus on moose. So there's a double whammy there. And some drainages are just really struggling. Well, I shouldn't say they're struggling, but they are. We're seeing a difference from 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So. The parasites that attack moose, are they different than those that would be after elk or deer?
It's the same, but moose, just the way they move through the habitat, they pick up a lot more parasites. They're just more prone to parasitic infection.
Okay. They're just moving slowly and lots of bugs will jump on them.
Yeah, and they tend to go back to the same spot. So there's a winter tick that we have. It's exclusively goes on hollow-haired animals, so ungulates. Won't affect dogs, cats, humans. And it comes out, well, right about now, October, sometimes into November, depending on the weather, and attaches to the moose. And then it travels on them until March. They engorge themselves on blood and then fall off and go underground. Well, moose tend to go to the same spots at the same time of year, and they pick the same ticks up. So if we have a warm winter and there's no snow on the ground when those ticks come off, their population explodes.
It's been a question for me for a long time, why the moose and not the other deer and elk. That answered it. Thank you. Yeah, I've wondered about that. What about other types of hunting? Of course, we've got our ungulate season. That's one everyone thinks about. But we also hunt birds, and we also hunt predators, basically.
We do, yeah. So the bird seasons, the grouse has been great this year. I mean, there's grouse everywhere. People have been pretty happy about that. Duck season's going to start. We had a youth waterfowl. The youth 16 and under have an opportunity to harvest waterfowl 2 weeks before the season starts. So it's a great opportunity to get those kids out. They don't have to have a federal wildlife or a waterfowl stamp. And it went really well. I saw a lot of adults with their kids having a good time.
They don't have to fight with the hardcore hunters for the good spots.
Right. It gives them an opportunity. And it's great. It's a great idea. And the general waterfowl season will start not this weekend, but next, I believe.
And does Idaho have a good waterfowl season? Is it a popular season here?
I think it is. It depends where you are and what region and what the water's doing. Unfortunately, here, it's great. We get tons of different species. The unfortunate thing is dropping the lake to 2051 regularly, elevation 2051, I should say, puts a damper on some of especially the puddle ducks. They'll run out of vegetation to eat. They can't reach the bottom. They're just pushed way out into deeper water. So, of course, they just fly south.
Sure, that makes sense. So they're not around to be hunted.
Right. There's some opportunity still. I mean, I'm not saying that it's just gone, but it's not like it used to be. And I think we just have to get used to the changes and find new spots to hunt.
Makes sense. Yeah. And I'm sure everyone who's listening knows I'm from Minnesota, but we had a pheasant season there and also a little bit of quail. And I do see quail in the area, but not really too many pheasants here, are there, at least in this area?
There isn't. Budweiser used to do they used to raise and release pheasants up in Bonner's Ferry in the hop farms. And you can still see some remnant pheasants running around, but they no longer actively put pheasants out or raise them. So that's changed a lot.
Yeah, I have seen a pheasant or two up there, and I wondered if they just had a better opportunity for habitat or what was happening.
Yeah, so. Winter's tough on them here. A lot of them don't survive the winter.
So. Pretty snowy. Yeah, pretty snowy. That's right. And quail. Our quail are California quail, yes?
Yes, correct. Hmm. The ones that say Chicago?
Yeah.
With the little top knot.
That's right. Yeah. That's very true. And are there many folks that hunt them or not really?
I don't see a lot out in the field. Maybe they do on their private property, but it is an opportunity, and there's quite a few of them.
Yeah, I seem to see them here and there, so they're out there, that's for sure. Well, now on to a hunt that I'm very curious about because I've not experienced either of these hunts, but mountain lions and bears. Is that season going on right now?
It is. So we have, with bears, you can, outside of Unit 1, there's no baiting, but you can bait bears. which is a, you know, some people don't like it, and I understand that, but it's a great opportunity, and it's a great way to hunt bears because you get to observe the bear, make sure you know what you're shooting. It's not a sow with cubs. And it's just a great way to observe bears and harvest one. And we also have hound season, which you can pursue bears with dogs. And that's a lot of work, a lot of fun. Some people say, well, it's really unfair. I would challenge those people to go out with a houndsman and really see what it's about, because it's
see not, what it takes for right. that to work out. I'm curious, do bears, will the black bears then climb a tree when hounds pursue them, like a mountain lion would?
Exactly. They'll go up a tree. Sometimes they'll even jump trees. So they'll get to the top, jump a tree, come back down, and the dogs will stay at the tree thinking that the bear's still up there, but it's long gone. So they're smart. They know what to do. And another, just like baiting with hounds, the houndsman or the hunter can get in there and see, is it a sow with cubs? Is it a young bear that I should let live? Is it, and those things you can't really see when you're stalking a bear. As most people know that hunt bears, you look at a bear through your scope and boy, it's a 300 pounder. And then it ends up being a 120 pounder. So you don't get a really good view of it.
Understandable. So. I'm curious about the bear population in Idaho. Is it growing, stable? What do you know about it?
That's tough to comment on the whole state. I can only comment with accuracy just in my area, but I think our population is really productive here. We have a lot of bears, and especially in Unit 1, which is north of Clark Fork River, Ponderay Lake, and the Ponderay River up to the Canadian border, is we don't have a huge harvest because we don't allow hound hunting or baiting because of the grizzly bears.
Sure.
So that population doesn't reach harvest potential at all. So we have a lot of bears, as people know, and they call and say, bears in my chicken coop, the bears in my...
Seem to be no shortage of bears.
No, so not at all.
I guess we don't need to worry about them. And how about mountain lions? Or how are they doing in the state?
They're doing
or the
great.
Area?
Yeah, they're doing great here. Again, we have the limited hound hunting in Unit 1, lots of hound hunting in 2, 3, 4, 4A. And the mountain lion hunters, the houndsmen, are really good about self-regulating themselves. So they won't take a female. They don't take smaller toms. They want to let them grow. So our population is actually doing really well.
Well, that's one that is a bit harder for the public to understand because we almost never see a mountain lion. We're more likely to see a bear, I would say. Yes. Well, good to hear it. Yeah. Well, how does Fish and Game determine the regulations for the year? Is it based on the prior year's surveys or studies?
It is. Yeah, there's a couple things that go into it. We now are on a two-year cycle. So we used to do every year we'd sit down, write the regulations or set up some proposals for the regulations, and it just became too cumbersome. So we go to every 2 years so we can kind of have some consistency. So we do look at the harvest data. We look at aerial flights, which is very difficult in the panhandle. There's some Unit 1s very difficult to fly with a helicopter. We're not seeing what we should see or what we would see in other parts of the state. So we rely heavily on harvest data and through that check station that I referred to earlier, the data we're collecting from hunters. So it's really important for hunters to be accurate and honest. A lot of them think, well, I'm not going to tell them that I harvest this up the upper pack because then they're going to think that there's too many elk taken out of there. So I'm going to say this is out of somewhere else. And we see a lot of misinformation that comes in on those. And it's understandable. You know, everybody wants to keep their hunting spot, but that data doesn't get shared. I don't look at it and go, oh boy, I'm going to go to the upper pack next year because three guys, you know.
Yeah, so, and tell all my friends. No,
right,
you're not.
Right. No, I don't say anything. I mean, that's
of course not.
That's just data. It's just numbers that we look at and helps us help sportsmen.
Right. It's for the greater good. So we should really all report accurately.
Absolutely.
I agree with that. How about the weather for this year? Is that having an unusual impact on hunting season?
I think it did in early archery season. A lot of the elk were centered around water. There was no water out there other than the small springs and wallows that were year round. And once that rain hit in the first part of September, it really spread out the elk and people were, I can't find any elk. Well, they're not struggling to find water. So they're going where they want to rather than where they need to.
Right.
Early in the summer, you know, they're pretty adaptable. That warm weather with no moisture whatsoever. It really didn't change much other than wildfires.
Sure. What about the hunting population, the demographics? Is that changing in northern Idaho or not?
It is.
Really?
You look across the nation and the hunting population is not keeping up with population growth. Although we have growing numbers of hunters, it's not staying with the number of...
The percentage maybe isn't
correct.
The same. Oh, yeah.
So we have about... I should have written it down, but I believe we have over 270,000 resident hunters, and our population's 1.4, maybe 1.5 now. And so that's, what, a seventh of the population? And that's kind of gone down a little bit, but we're still seeing an increase in the amount of hunters.
Okay.
And what's really good to see is we're seeing a lot more female hunters. So that's great. Women are saying, hey, I can go get good organic meat off the hill for my family. And it's really, I love seeing it in the field when I see women, especially when they're out there by themselves doing what they like to do, and it's encouraging.
So. Well, it's interesting that you say that about women hunters, because I am one, and that is one of the reasons that I hunt, to be able to get natural food for my family raised, yeah, that's lived in the outdoors, and I don't have to worry about, well, too much about what it's been eating.
Right.
Yeah, and additionally, there's a there's an interesting sense of ethics around that, too, that I enjoy. So
I agree. Yeah, that's...
So,
you know, where you were involved in the whole process.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
That's the beauty of hunting.
I would say so. One of the high points for my family. So it's good to hear that. Good to hear that about women. Well, I think we're going to take a song break and come back and talk a little more about hunting ethics, and then on to hunter safety for hunters and also for the non-hunters out there.
Sounds great.
Yeah. We have a selection that came from Matt, and I'm going to play it. It's Greg Brown, the songwriter is the request, but the individual song wasn't yours. We looked for a different song and found this one, which is also good. Where Do the Wild Geese Go? And for those of you just joining us, we're listening to 88.5 KRFY Community. And that was Greg Brown with Where Do the Wild Geese Go? Where do those wild geese go, Matt?
They go south.
I guess we knew that. They're flying over right now.
They
We've
are.
Been seeing them.
It's a wonderful sound.
That's
I
right.
Love it. That's why I know fall's here.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. And seeing the V's high in the sky. It is a wonderful time of year to observe geese. For those of you just joining us, you are listening to 88.5 KRFY Community Radio for North Idaho. This is Julie Calamine. I'm the Tuesday morning show host, normally here with Phil Huff, who's away this week. We're joined this week by Fish and Game Wildlife Officer, your
conservation
thank
officer.
Thank you, conservation officer.
People call us all sorts of different names.
You know it. I will do so too. Matt Haig. Matt, it's so good to have you here this morning.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Yes, and we were talking during the break. We're lucky to have Matt because he's between the archery season and the rifle season, which gives him a few days to get caught up and get ready to go full on again.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Well, we're back from song break, and I think we'd like to talk just a bit about hunting ethics. And it's an important topic these days, and one that we need to focus on everywhere, and in North Idaho too. How do you find hunters in the area? Are they?
Oh, 95% of them are great.
Good.
That's good. And I run into hunters from they're just beginning to hunters that have been hunting for 60 years. So. You know, you expect the hunters that are just starting out, they're building their ethic. They're building what's right, what's wrong, even outside of what's legal and not legal, which pretty much defines ethics in some way. So it's really encouraging. What's discouraging is that 5% that are flagrant and have no regard for the law, no regard for the resource, no regard for private land. And those are the ones that always make the newspaper and always make the news, and people think, oh, what a bunch of scumbags.
And
but it's not.
And additionally, because they don't have an ethic, they're maybe not always safe, and they're the ones we see out there too and make us worried about hunters. So
correct.
It is unfortunate, the very small percentage who haven't developed an ethic that would be acceptable for the rest of us.
Right.
But you know, it is a little bit more than legality, because everyone does develop a hunting ethic as they go through life, those that hunt.
They do. Yeah.
And part of it is about being ethical and safe with game, but another part of it is about how it affects one's own hunt. We develop our own ethics about what's right for us.
Absolutely. And that may be what weapon you use. Some people say, you know, I'm not challenged by using a center fire rifle anymore. I'm going to just do archery. And then it evolves. I'm not just going to do archery with a compound bow. I'm going to make my own bow. I'm only going to hunt, you know, certain times of the year. They want to challenge themselves. And that's really neat to see people evolve through that process.
And it makes hunting interesting throughout life for people as they develop their skills.
It does, yeah.
It really does. Yeah, it's fun to talk ethics. If a person's a young person or a person who hasn't hunted much, how do they find their ethic? Are there classes? Do they talk to other hunters?
We always recommend finding a mentor, someone, whether it's a family member or a friend, to develop that. And going back to what I said earlier about that 5% that just has no regard, it's unfortunate because they want to get into hunting, but they have not learned an ethic. And part of the ethics is following the laws. And they just don't, because they've never learned that's the right thing to do.
And the more fun way to do things. Let's give the game a chance, right?
Right.
Makes it much more interesting.
Absolutely. And I don't know how people poach a deer, whether it's spotlight or out of season, and hang that on their wall and look at that and say, boy, that was a fun hunt. Or tell a story about it.
You don't get a sense that they probably can tell that story.
Yeah, no.
Unless it's a made-up story.
Right.
Right, which isn't the best. Well, I couldn't agree more, and hunting ethics are a topic we could talk about all day. I was holding up a book that I've been reading, just started reading, so we won't get into it, but it's called The Ethical Carnivore by Louise Gray, and it's about a gal who only eats meat that she kills for an entire year, and I can't wait to see how it ends up, because it's an interesting concept, isn't it?
It is. I need to pick that book up. That sounds like the female version of Stephen Ranella.
There you go. That's right. Yeah. And I'm going to be looking for his book. So together we'll get some new reading in. That'll be good. Well, we've talked a bit about hunter ethics, and let's move on because we don't have too much more time this morning, and talk a bit about hunter safety, both from the hunter standpoint and the non-hunter's standpoint.
Sure. Hunter safety is required as of January 1st, 1975 for all new hunters. And it really is the tip of the iceberg. It's just the basic class that we give to 9-year-olds and older. So anybody that fits into that January 1st, 1975, or born after that. So it's that class could be a year long. It should be. We just don't have the time or resources to do that. And so it's an important stepping off point, but it really needs to be developed.
Sure. But at least we know that everyone since 1975 have been receiving some hunter safety training.
Correct.
Yeah, good. Good to know that. And regarding non-hunter safety in the woods, talk to us for a moment about that, what we should be looking for and doing this time of the year.
The first thing I would focus on is clothing. It doesn't have to be hunter orange, although that's recommended. For non-hunters, I'm referring to, even with dogs, put some orange ribbon on, make yourself known that you're out there. I see a lot of people at trailheads or, like our wildlife management areas that go out, during hunting season. And I say, hey folks, just so you're aware, hunting season's on and you're dressed in all brown, not a good idea. And you know, they have a right to be out there, and we share the land, but we also have responsibilities when we go out there as well. And so do the hunters. They need to communicate with non-hunters that are out there. Hey, I'm going to go hunt up here. Where were you planning on taking the dogs for a walk? Just communicate. That's the key to success.
Sure.
Out there. So.
But sometimes the hunter's already in place. Maybe a bow hunter or a quiet rifle hunter. They're there and we don't even know that they're near us.
Right.
And that's where clothing is important.
It's extremely important. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And hunters should whistle or say hello if they're in a tree stand, or, you know, camoed in a secluded spot. They should say, hey, I'm over here.
Is that true? Because I have not experienced hunters shouting out their presence, their location.
Shout it out, but if they're close enough, they'll say, "Hey, I'm right here."
Oh, so we're not frightened or notice them at the last minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, many of us do have pets, dogs, cats, that sort of thing, and we worry about them during hunting season. Should they be wearing red or orange?
I really recommend it. Some bright color, a pink, you know, anything, orange, especially if they're off a lead and they're running well ahead of you. It's a really good idea to have that. And I would hope a hunter wouldn't take a shot like that. I mean, you're not identifying your target. It's just bad firearm safety all the way around. But there's also, you want to do your part to make sure that doesn't happen. So, yeah, put something on your pets.
Good idea. Yeah. Another question about non-hunter safety. I know that folks do hunt private land with permission, of course, and there are rules about how close and far we need to be from people's houses, but is it a valid concern to be worried that a stray bullet could pass through your yard or your house? Is that something people should think about or not really?
I have not had that since I've been here, and I've been here since 2005. I was in Orofino prior to that, but it's not a huge concern because most, like I said, 95% of hunters out there know where they're hunting, know where the houses are, and won't take a shot that's unsafe.
Sure, that would endanger someone.
Right. And in Idaho, we don't have any laws that prohibit firearms discharge by distance from a house. So if we did, then someone couldn't shoot a deer in their backyard or...
Okay. So I made an assumption because in Minnesota we do have that and not so in Idaho.
Right. A lot of states do. You can't shoot within a quarter mile of a house but in Idaho there is no rule.
Okay. So you could be sitting just outside of your house and in your deer stand and you would be legal.
You could be inside your house.
Oh my.
I've seen that a few times.
And that's not illegal. That would be legal.
That's legal. Yeah.
Wow.
If you do hit a house, though, that's occupied, there is a code for that. It's firing at and hitting an occupied dwelling.
Yes. So. One should receive a ticket for that.
Yes.
I would think.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I've got to circle back because I realized I hadn't asked you about what I consider an important fowl of bird season, and that's the turkey season, because we are so just overrun by turkeys in the area, and I'm wondering where that's going, where that season is going.
Hopefully more liberal.
Yes.
I'm not speaking on behalf of the department. I'm just speaking personally. I would like to see almost a no limit without a tag. I mean, we're charging $18.50 a tag. You can go down the yolks and get a butterball turkey for less than that.
Yes, you can.
And it tastes much better.
And it doesn't have to cook so long.
Right. So I would like to see us move to more liberal seasons and more liberal methods of take.
It does seem like that's an area where fish and game, where regulations could make a difference, because they do seem to be in overabundance for the area.
They do, especially here. I mean, we struggle with it in the panhandle, and I think we're one of the few regions in Idaho that has an overabundance of turkeys. And 10 years ago, we started trapping and moving, transplanting. We were shipping them down south to Weezer and Payette. And that's a lot of money and a lot of resources, and it didn't help. Mm. So as people know, we have turkeys coming out of our ears.
Oh, yeah, it didn't help the population here. Absolutely not. They're everywhere.
They are.
Yeah. And they are fun to watch, but there are awfully large numbers.
They are. It's a fun hunt in the spring, you know, and when I say liberalize the season, I wouldn't want to see that spring season liberalized, because it's fun to, you know, call and really it's a challenge. It's a fun hunt. But in the fall, when they're flocked up, and that's when we can start shooting some turkeys and really help out a lot of hobby farmers and ranchers and farmers that struggle with, you know, 200 turkeys on their hay, and they make a mess.
It's, if not a predation problem, it is a mess. It is just a big mess. That's
absolutely
true. Yeah, well, we'll see where that goes. And let's see. We've talked about turkeys. Oh, I wanted to ask you about any Well, just sort of outlook for the rest of the season. Is it looking like it's going to be really good in terms of all animals this year?
I think so. I think we'll have a record number of harvests with elk, just because we've expanded the opportunities there. And our deer population has been just outstanding the last 5 years, and we should see some really good success numbers coming out of that as well.
Very good. So. Well, Matt, we're starting to run short on time. We've just got a couple more minutes. Are there any topics that you'd like to add to our morning discussion? Anything we've missed?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
We've done pretty well.
It's
Northern Idaho, and there's an abundance of wildlife, and we've got fish and game trying to do their very best to maintain populations and do a good job with the hunting season. So it's great that you could be here, and I've been happy to hear about 2017. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me here. It's good to get out some messages and important topics like that. So I appreciate the time.
That's right. And I suppose in the spring hunter safety classes will start up. That's when kids
will. Correct. Yeah, we just finished our last one in September, and then I believe it's April we'll start again. We skip May because we have had low attendance here locally, people doing lost in the 50s and other things that, weather gets nice and people don't want to be in class. And then we go from June through September.
Okay, very good. So the youngsters can look forward to that, and we'll just wish we all have a great and safe and useful hunting season this year.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt. And we're going to take a song break and then be back with some upcoming KRFY shows and also upcoming events. Out with a song again picked by Matt.
Right.
And this is Widespread Panic, Bears Gone Fishing. And that was Widespread Panic with Bears Gone Fishing. And again, it was a recommendation from Matt Haig, who has just joined us and has just left to begin his fitness training test for fish and game. So he had to run off and get over to Lakeshore Drive to do that. If you're just joining us, you're listening to 88.5 FM KRFY Community Radio for North Idaho. And again, this is Julie Calamine, your Tuesday morning show host. We're missing Phil this week, but he will be back next week. I have plenty to talk about. I hope I've got time before the end of our hour, but I'll begin by mentioning upcoming morning shows. Join us tomorrow, Wednesday, October 4th, with morning show hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. There will be two interviews tomorrow. The first guests will be from the Eureka Institute with an update on this educational organization. The second guest will be Dr. Liz Wargo and Julie McCallan from the Sandpoint Waldorf School. They will be talking about the upcoming movie at the Panada, which is called Screenagers. That'll be tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. on 88.5. Then on Thursday, join morning hosts Jack Peterson and Jim Healy, and their guest is going to be John Fitzgerald from the Music Conservancy of Sandpoint, and also hosts of the newest KRFY local show, an upcoming local show live, mostly live, I believe, called Classical Music is Cool. I may need a correction there. It may not be live. And again, that's 8 a.m. Thursday on the morning show, 88.5 KRFY Community Radio. And next Tuesday, you'll be joining me, Julie, and Phil, who will have returned. And our guests will be Trinity Nicholson. She's from Panhandle Special Needs. And that'll be at 8 a.m. And then we're going to have a second guest at the very end talking about The Ruck, and that's the group that helps folks organize long distance hikes like the PCT, Pacific Crest Trail, or the Appalachian Trail, the AT, or the Continental Divide Trail. Moving on to before moving on, I'd like to talk about some of the other shows that you might consider listening to if you're enjoying 88.5 KRFY. And some of those are tomorrow morning, Bernie Mosier, who does Wednesday morning. That's really great music picked out by Bernie, and that's happening from 5 until 7 a.m. on Wednesday mornings. It's great. He's got easy listening and really wonderful, interesting music that he's carefully selected. Wednesday evenings, we've got Hump Day Cafe, and that's with Velma, Queen of Fun. That's from 6:30 to 9. And then Susie Perez does occasionally Between the Notes. That's on Friday in the evenings, 6:30 to 9, 7 to 9. And then we have a new show, relatively new show, that you should catch if you enjoy jazz. It's John Royhands, and his show is Jazz Over Sandpoint. That's Sunday evenings, 8 to 9 p.m. And I may have forgotten the Norwester. That's Jack's Live and Local, mostly local and rarely live, Tuesday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. So that's a lot of live programming that we do here at KRFY that it would be great if you would have an opportunity to listen to, because they're great shows and they're originated weekly by folks right here in your community. Additionally, we have an upcoming online auction. It's our fall online auction, and that's done through an organization named biddingforgood.com/KRFY. That's happening this October 14th through the 22nd, and it is a fall benefit for KRFY, meaning that by going to biddingforgood.com, you will be able to look at the items that folks from the community have donated. By bidding on those, you're making a direct donation to the station. And as you know, we're community radio volunteers other than two part-time employees, and really are supported by donations from volunteers, underwriters, and that's basically it. So I hope you'll be able to look at that and bid on something. I have a few folks I'd like to thank for their donations prior to the Bidding for Good auction. This is a list of some, but not all. We'll be adding additional names as we go, and you'll see them at the online auction. But I want to thank Baxter's Restaurant. I would like to thank 41 South Restaurant. I'd like to thank Marilyn McIntyre, local artist who's donated an original work of art. You'll be able to see that soon. I'd like to thank Ed Busby, who's going to be donating a class on snow structures for folks that are interested in winter survival. I'd like to thank Emily Levin from Red Wheelbarrow for donating produce. I'd like to thank Roniger's for doing the same. I'd also like to thank the Pondere Garden Center for a gift certificate donation. And I'd really like to thank Fiddling Red from Fiddling Red's Music for lessons that he'll be offering online. And also Charlie Parrish and Schweitzer Mountain for their donations. You'll be seeing all of that soon. And moving on to the events calendar. For today, the 3rd, there's the ongoing Memory Cafe, which is at Kokanee Coffee, 509 Fifth Avenue. And they host the Memory Cafe. That's for folks diagnosed with Alzheimer's or other related dementia and their caregivers. The only cost is what you order at the bakery. For more information about that, you can call 208-666-2996, extension 8314. And that's held on the 1st and 3rd Tuesday of every month. So that's at 2 p.m., and it goes until 3:30. Useful gathering for folks that are suffering from Alzheimer's or dementia. Tomorrow night on the 4th, Brews for Views. Have a beer with Sasquatch to benefit the Pine Street Woods during Brews for Views. That's tomorrow night from 5 to 8 p.m., and that's at the Idaho Poor Authority, 203 Cedar. Join Kinixu Land Trust for live music with Marty Perrin and Doug Bond and Sasquatch the Movie. Watch that. And a chance to win a 2017-18 Schweitzer Season Pass. That's a great deal. Drink beer from Ecliptic Brewing, and you'll be helping the Kinixu Land Trust protect Pine Street Woods. And for more information on that, you can call 208-263-9471. Additionally, on the 5th, we have Spooky Paint Night. The Pottery Bug hosts a Spooky Paint Night at 6 p.m. Come paint Nevermore, inspired from Edgar Allan Poe's poem. Bring your own BYOB for something to sip, and bring a friend for a special price, which I'm not going to quote on air, but for more information, go to Pottery Bug and RSVP with Gina. But there is a charge. Additionally, we have American Sign Language Practice on the 6th. That's at the Sandpoint Library. It hosts the American Sign Language Practice at 9:30 a.m., free and open to anyone wanting to practice silent signing. It would be good if you had a bit of experience, meet in the lobby, or call 510-423-1079. Also coming up, we have Pushing the Limits Community. This is on the 7th. This is the second of three sessions involving discussion about how our communities are adapting to fires, floods, and other extreme weather events caused by climate change. This will be held at 1 p.m. on the 7th at the Monarch Mountain Coffee, which is at 208 North 4th Avenue. The series is presented by the East Bonner County Library District. We'll develop ideas about how families and communities can be better prepared for the future by working together and discuss the book Heat by Arthur Herzog. It's available free to program participants, but not required reading for the program. You can pre-register for this by calling 208-263-6930. And for more info, you can contact Mike Bauer at 208-265-2665. We've got ongoing the Sandpoint Farmers Market on Saturday. That's from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Farm and Park. It's starting to wind down, so you might want to get yourself over there before the year ends. We have on the 7th a 4-H enrollment and family fun night. So if you're a 4-H or would like to become a 4-H person, you would want to attend this. And that is from 6 to 9 p.m. on the 7th. For more info, you can call 208-263-8511. Additionally, we have this would be on October 9th. If you haven't attended one of these yet, you may wish to. It's organic seed saving. Come and discuss organic gardening and seed saving at 1 p.m. in the Sandpoint Library. That's at 1407 Cedar Street. Bring food and seeds to share. And if you can't, just come anyway. Call 208-263-6248 for more information on that. I'm not seeing this on my schedule, but I'm just going to give a shout out that if you're interested in straw bale gardening, the Bonner County Gardeners Association is having a class tomorrow night, Wednesday night, from 5 until 8. Well, they'll be teaching the basics of straw bale gardening. For more information on that, go to Bonner County Gardeners Association. Find that at Google. Go online and you'll get the details for the home hort class series. And I think that would be a good one for those of you interested in straw bale gardening. Save your back. From the 9th through the 31st, we've got wildcrafting for kids. Kiniksu Land Trust is sponsoring an out-of-school program, Wildcrafting, with outdoor educational specialist Dave Kretschmar. This will be held Mondays and Tuesdays. Sessions are 3 to 4 for the younger kids, 8 to 12, and they're from 4 to 5:30 for children aged 13 to 18. This will be happening at the Winter Ridge Educational Building. Projects may include tanning hides, weaving baskets and mats, making archery bows, arrows, and working with clay, fiber, stone, wood, and natural cordage. There's a cost, and for more information, you can call 208-263-9471. And then the last events calendar item I'll mention is on the 11th. That's Outdoor Idaho, Almost Canada. That's at the Panada, 300 North 1st Avenue, and they're hosting the Outdoor Idaho Almost Canada documentary. That's at 7 p.m. It's about our area, and it was made by Idaho Public TV, so I think that might be an interesting one to see. It's free, but you need to register. So if you want to catch that one on the 11th, go to idahoptv.org. That's about it for time for this Tuesday's morning show. This is your host, Julie Calamine, here at 88.5 KRFY Panhandle Community Radio for North Idaho. If you've missed all or part of this show and would like to hear it or make sure that someone you know hears it, you're welcome to listen to the podcast, which I'm about to post, and you would do that by going to www.krfy.org and click on the podcast. With that, we're going to go out with a song in honor of Tom Petty, who, as you know, passed away yesterday. This one is one you're going to know, Into the Great Wide Open. Hopefully.